So I'm loving this retreat. Been on a lot of retreats and taught on retreats. And I'm loving this deep interweaving of movement, of yoga, yoga asana, with the Dharma, with meditation. Partly because it just inherently balances the nervous system. There's a resourcing that's ongoing throughout each day. And that helps us to stabilize as we meet what's arising. It helps us to metabolize through the body what's coming up. And so you might just notice that as we move through the day, the ways that something might come up, and then we move, and that gets moved through, and something else is here. Because the Buddha was very much aware of this human dynamic, this human nature of tending to what's not okay, right? The mind is very good at looking for what's not the way I want it to be, or the way I feel it should be, or what might cause me harm. That's an important skill. And for many people, that's an ongoing skill that has to be engaged to live in the world. So we can honor that kind of scanning that happens in the mind. What's not okay? What's not okay? The Buddha was aware of this, and he really brought in joy. He brought together this, it made a deep infusion, if I can use that word. It reminds me of like an herbal remedy. Like a deep infusion of joy and happiness with this process of working with dukkha, right? This ennobling truth. Yes, there is challenge. How about we support ourselves with joy? How about we turn towards joy wherever it's arising? Just maybe even in this moment, you might feel the subtle joy of the sunshine coming in through the windows. I was sitting outside my room and I just felt could see there was some mist over the hills. There was the frost on the grass. It was cold, but also warm in the sun. And that was enough to feel that sense of joy, to touch into it. And so the Brahmaviharas, the structure of the Brahmaviharas and the way we're moving through them in this retreat is so skillful. Because we start with metta, right? This cultivation of a non-contentious heart, of a heart that knows how to be friendly with ourselves, with our experience, within the relational field. And then that supports us to turn towards the difficulty, right? To see, oh, there is something painful here. And to touch that with a compassionate heart and a responsive heart, to have a practice around working with that difficulty. We also need a balance. There needs to be this sense of uplift, the sense of rejoice, the sense of celebration, the sense of gratitude. And so joy as this third Brahmavihara, mudita is the name for joy. And I want to say that for some of you at this point in the retreat, I have no idea what day it is, but I know we've been here, right? We've been doing this work for a while now. And sometimes what happens at this point in the retreat is that we've been metabolizing the momentum of our lives. And as we get a little bit more peaceful, I was hearing this in the interviews yesterday, as we get a little more peaceful, often what arises are that which has not been cared for, that which has not been seen, because we've been moving quickly, because we've been busy, because there's a lot happening in our world. And so sometimes at this time in the retreat, we start to experience the hindrances. So we might experience more aversion or more desire, more wanting for something that's not here. We might experience a lot of fatigue or even just not feeling good in the body that might come up. We might experience a lot of restlessness or planning, like, oh, okay, here, I'm this here for this many more days, and then when I get out, then I'll join this sangha, and I'll read this book about Dharma, and then I'll plan my next retreat. We were doing that in the teacher's lounge. We were talking about the next retreat that we all want to go on, like experiencing like this fear of missing out on our next retreat. And so we can just really notice the teacher Ajahn Chah, who's a teacher, Thai forest master, very powerful teacher to many of the Spirit Rock teachers. He said, allow those hindrances. Maybe it's one of the things I mentioned, or maybe it's grief, or maybe it's fear, maybe something else, your own flavor. Allow that to wake you up. Allow that to invite you into kindness, compassion, into being here, into being with. So he said, when the hindrance arises, read the book of your own heart. And to me, that also means go to the somatic, because the cognitive is so squirrely and it invites more thinking. I have the sense that we'll come on retreat. I used to think this, I'm going to go on a retreat and I'm going to figure this thing out. I'm going to get to the bottom of this thing about my life, and then I'll emerge and, you know, I'll manifest whatever it is, manifest like the greatest version of myself, you know, these ideas about what it means to come on retreat. And then you start to realize the more you think, the more you think. And it's just ongoing. The Buddha described it as an ox chasing its tail. That's really helped me before. It's like, whoa, here we go again. Let's go around the track again on this one, right? And so when we go to the somatic, we can sense into, oh, wait, okay. That restlessness, there's like a tightness under the diaphragm. You know, this is my experience. There's like the gut is just kind of gripped right now. Or I'm defending in some way, like one of my shoulders has come forward all of a sudden. I'm defending in some way against something that I feel is frightening me. Whatever it is, we all have our own flavor. But when we go to the somatic and we touch it with kindness, with warm-heartedness, with gentleness, with compassion, and just, we don't have to like dive in like, okay, let's blast this thing open. No, just a little breath as we've been doing, a little movement. How is it to take the shoulder back a little bit? You know, just let the heart open just a little bit. And then maybe you go back into the pattern. You feel, okay, this is what my body thinks is safe. How would it be to breathe into this? So we go to the somatic. This is the reading the book of your body intelligence, reading the book of your heart. Sometimes we feel like, there's just not enough time. And the retreats, like this point in the retreat, it's just going so fast. You know, how do I hang on to the teaching? How do I hang on to this feeling? On retreat, I often plan how I'm going to do that. This feels amazing right now. I'm going to figure out how to make this last when I'm out in the world, you know. And I was thinking about, you know, what if today, what if you woke up this morning and you were supposed to go to work? It's like, I think today's Wednesday. It's like, okay, you're supposed to go to work, whatever it is that you do, or go, you know, run errands or get online or something like that. And someone just said to you, you know what? I've taken care of your work. All your emails, you don't have to worry. Don't have to text anyone today. You don't have to cook. You don't have to clean. the hot water is in the thing down there. You can just go get your cup, put a bag in hot water so you don't have to boil it. Don't make coffee if you drink coffee. You're going to be in a beautiful natural setting. It'll be quiet. And you'll be there for another 2.5 days. How would that feel? Be like, oh my gosh, are you serious? That's the gift of this moment, right? That's what you actually gave to yourself. Every moment, that's the choice that you can give yourself. As Rolf said yesterday, you can make that choice to remember, oh my gosh, I'm here. Oh my gosh, I can move my body. However that is, maybe it's hard to move your body, but you came into the hall this morning. So many people in the world would give anything to come into this hall. Just to walk, you know, just to walk. So that can be a flavor of joy, that sense of gratitude, of the immensity of the gift. I feel this so often with the Dharma. You know, I feel like our job here is we come into this space and we let the medicine of the Dharma touch our heart. We listen, we feel, we apply that medicine like a balm, B-A-L-M, like a balm, ideally like a balm or a salve to the places where there's harm, you know, the places where it doesn't feel good, the places where we've been confused or deluded. And we also can remember the gift. This lineage from Asia, you know, this is an Asian lineage that's been developed over centuries. People have carried these teachings over the Himalayas. Like, there was no Lyft, there was no Uber, there was no Dharma Seed, there was no Zoom, right? Literally walking for years just to share the teaching. You know, or to receive the teaching, a little bit of the teaching. Wow. And then beings, bodhisattvas, handing it down over the centuries so that we may touch into it, so that it may uplift our hearts, so that we may bring some of this joy into the world that so needs it. As Anne was speaking about so beautifully yesterday, oh, this studio in Ukraine and this image of the woman holding a child on her feet, you know, I woke up with that this morning and I was just like, oh, choose joy. Choose joy. Remember, even in the midst of it all, we can choose that joy. And that has an effect. It's like we place that drop into the stream of life. We place our drop into the stream of life and it changes the course of the stream. You know, many, many luminaries over the centuries who have done that, right? I could just name so many right now who chose the path of the heart and radically changed the course of history. And as Anne said, we don't have to do that. We don't have to be hard on ourselves if we're not Martin Luther King, you know, or Prentice Hemphill, or some of these other incredible beings, but we can just in a moment make a difference. And so the Brahmaviharas are sometimes described as a natural response to the world when the heart is open. So we cultivate them. Yes, we cultivate them. That's part of what we do. But we also can feel as the heart softens and as the body opens through the practices we've been doing, there's a natural metta. There's a natural compassion. There's a natural mudita. So mudita is sympathetic joy. So I want to say there's many flavors of joy. And Anne was telling us this morning that Thich Nhat Hanh said, hey, if it's joy, it's joy. Like, you don't have to worry, is this sympathetic, or should I be feeling this, or is it okay? This is on retreat. This is not one of the Brahma Viharas. No, if it's joy, just go with it. You know, just go with it. But just to name, so you kind of can get an essence of maybe a type of joy that you haven't been exposed or you haven't really thought of for some of us, is sympathetic joy, which is a deep well-being in ourselves. We cultivate this deep well-being in ourselves, and then there's this natural joy in the well-being of others. And so when we see that someone else is doing well, yes, that's a nice form of a mudita. But I was also feeling into, like, a dear friend of mine right now is really having a hard time in life. But I also feel so much mudita because I know what a deep soul she is and how much love and strength she has. And so I know she'll be okay. So when she tells me about how hard it is, I listen and I have a lot of compassion. But underneath that, I'm feeling the mudita for who she is. So mudita can be for the wonderful, you know, accomplishments of another. If a friend gets a promotion or, you know, finds themselves in a wonderful friendship or relationship of some kind, yes, beautiful. But often we can also just feel the mudita for the essence of another being. I feel that a lot. Being on an airplane and I see the flight attendant just care. Just say, like, yeah, I'll get you that. And it's like, oh, mudita for that essence, that person that cares, that's not just doing their job. They're actually attending to the world around them. That's beautiful. And so Booker mentioned going to South Africa to practice for a month at a center called Dharmagiri with Tanisra and Kitty Sorrow. And 4 years ago, actually right around this time, right at this time, the month of April, I went there as well and sat for a month. The center that's at the base of this incredible mountain, like no other mountain I've ever seen. Very, very powerful. The centers, these little buildings, and then you look up and this mountain is just right above you. There's a stream that flows down, more than one stream that flows down. South Africa is a powerful, powerful land. There's been a lot of intense history there. The people, the Khoisan people, lived there for 10,000 years, maybe longer, peacefully on that land. And they knew every rhythm. They understood the nature, the way that the spirits, the way that the natural world interacted with their own lives in a deep and inextricable way. They called it the place of rain, Mvuleni, the place of rain, because there's these incredible storms. And so that mountain is powerful. It's like stands over you and you can feel the power when you're there. My dreams were just the whole time I was there. And on retreat was a dear Dharma friend, Gulu Singh. Maybe some of you know him. He's a beautiful Dharma teacher. He teaches here at Spirit Rock and Insight LA. And he's just a wonderful and equanimous being. And because we're in silence, I didn't know this, but later in the Dharma talk, he shared that he was having an experience of the gods of the mountains, of that mountain being angry with him. And Gulu's a Dharma teacher, but he's also a real estate attorney. And so he says himself, you know, he doesn't often say things like that. Like, that's not something he would just ordinarily share on a daily basis. So that, you know, really touched me, like how deeply that experience was for him. This feeling of just something was intense there. And one of the ways it manifested was this incredible allergies. I mean, he was just sneezing constantly. And I was sitting next to his wife, and then he was on the other side. And we were kind of in a circle right up at the front, so I was really close to him. And so, I mean, he was just sneezing and sneezing, and there was tissues, you know, all around. And all of us on the retreat were just like, oh my gosh, you poor, you know, just feeling that compassion, that karuna, like, oh gosh, this is hard, you know. It's hard to be when your nose is just running constantly, you know, to feel a lot of samadhi. And there was this cat on the land there, this cat named Moonshine. And we all had a lot of, well, those of us that love cats, this cat had a special relationship with one of the retreatants named Moira. And so the cat would come in through the window of the shrine room of the Dharma space. It's a really small space. So it was like 30 of us. And it would look around and then immediately go to Moira and sit on her lap. I love cats. I've always had cats. I have two massive cats. And so I was missing my cats. And so I would see it there at the window. And I would just, you know, it's like, maybe today is going to be the day that it'll notice me. And it's going to, you know, or just at least let me pet it. But it would just look at me. And I could feel other people in the room, the cat people, you know, the people that don't like cats were like, ooh, I hope it doesn't come over here. But the people that like cats are just like, oh. And there it's at Moira's lap. I'm like, oh. And she would, you know, she just didn't even seem to realize, you know, she was just sitting there quietly like, oh my gosh, yeah, this great gift of this cat. And so then one night, the cat came through the window and it was before the talk. And so Moira wasn't in the room yet. And so it came in from the outside and the window ledge was really narrow. And it came in through the window that was right next to Gulu. He was right next to the window. And it came in and it looked around and Moira wasn't there. And the window was just open, just a gap. So it was just enough for the cat to come through and then come onto that little ledge. So the cat looked around and it realized that Moira wasn't there. And it was like, I'm not interested. You know, I'm not interested in any of you. You know how cats are. It's like, they're just like... But then it realized that it couldn't turn around and the door was closed. So it couldn't turn around on the ledge. You could see it was like, and so several of us were in the hall there. Kate Johnson was there. She was sitting to my left. And so we're all kind of watching this cat and it paused for a moment and then it backed out of the window. And Gulu started laughing, and we all started laughing, but Gulu started laughing, and there was this moment of joy. There was this moment of lightness amidst all of the allergies and the sneezes and the, you know, the heaviness. Whew. There was a moment of joy, and I felt so much mudita for his joy, for his for his joy. And so sometimes with sympathetic joy, we can notice, and it's the same we mentioned with the practices of the Brahmaviharas, that they're purifications, right? And so sometimes we practice metta and we get aversion. Like, what's wrong with this picture? You know, the more I practice, the more averse I feel. Oh, I might need to be attending to the ill will. I might need more of a boundary here, right? So sometimes it's like it highlights this pressure point in our sense of self when we practice the Brahmaviharas. And so with joy, with sympathetic joy, sometimes it highlights envy. We notice, I don't feel joy for your happiness. I feel envy. I'm going to share something with you that might affect our future relationship. So if we get a chance to talk after the retreat or another time, just so you know this about me, is that if you do have an advanced degree, you have a master's degree, PhD, Even worse if you have like a few of those. If you just wouldn't mention that to me. It's really helpful. Just don't say anything about it. And I'll just assume whatever profession you're in that you didn't have to get a degree. If you're a doctor, you just kind of wandered into that. Because for me, there's something in my conditioning that feels like I don't have an advanced degree. It feels like, oh, you should have. Or you would be complete if you had that thing. And I know in my mind, yes, of course, that's not true. And I'm so joyful at the path that's brought me to this moment. And, you know, life is abundant and on and on. But somehow, as soon as I see like those letters, PhD, after someone's name, it's somatic. It's like, whew, my whole body goes into this reaction. And I have to like vacuum the house for like an hour afterwards. It's just like, oh, let this, you know, move through. So if I can control the world around me and no one ever mentions that, then it's okay. But unfortunately, every so often, it's like it comes up, you know. Like a woman has a bumper sticker that says finished, like PhD finished. Like I see that. I'm like, why do you have to put that on your car? See that every day. I live on a small island and we like see the same cars. Like, okay, yeah, see, I know, PhD, I got it. So I can see this as highlighting something, you know, this deep sense of like not worthy. And how beautiful. Like, oh, wow, you know that. That's hard for you, you know. That's difficult. There's some sense that love is a reward. I heard this from Ajahn Suchito, beautiful teacher in the UK, monastic teacher. Talking about the Brahma Viharas. And he said, you know, that some of us have learned that love is a reward, that joy is a reward, that kindness is a reward, compassion is a reward. If only you're good enough, if only you're smart enough, if only you look a certain way, if only you can, you know, play the piano. It's like one of those things that parents want for their kids. Like, okay, just make sure you can play the piano. You know, if only I could play the piano, then I would deserve love. And sometimes that gets turned inward. We learn, oh, okay, if I can be perfect, if I can be as good as you, if I can be better than you, then I'll get love. It's not conscious. Maybe it is, but usually it's not conscious. It's this drive. And the social conditioning does that, you know, it sets that up in lots of different ways. In the classroom or on the basketball court or dance, you know, what do you call it? Like the dance floor? Like, you know, so who can dance the best? That was like at my school. It was like, who could dance the best, you know? And it wasn't me. But whatever it is, there's always something. There's always something, you know, that shows up. And so the Brahma Viharas are a reconditioning in the unconditioned. So we recondition into the unconditioned. That you, we, all of us deserve love. We are love. That's a given. That's a birthright. We deserve joy. You don't have to do something amazing today. Just like Ralph said yesterday, what if you just breathed in and breathed out all day? That's enough, right? What if you were just you walking around Spirit Rock for a day? Oh my God, that's so beautiful. So there's this invitation. There's an invitation into the unconditional, into the abundant, the exalted, the immeasurable, as Booker so beautifully spoke about on whatever day that was. The heart that is filled with the Brahmaviharas. So I want to close with a quote. A lot of suspense there for this quote. It is good, though. It is a really good one. It's by one of my, just a person in our world that brings me so much joy with their magnificence and with their, they're an advocate for pleasure, an advocate for joy, Adrienne Marie Brown. And she writes, put your attention on suffering. Put your attention on suffering, which is constant and everywhere, and it is all you will see. Joy will come and laughter, but you will find it brief, possibly a distraction. Put your attention on joy, on being connected and feeling whole, and you will find it everywhere. Your heart will still break. Your heart will still break. You will know grief, but you will find it a reasonable cost for the random abundance of miracles. You will find it a reasonable cost for the random abundance of miracles and soft, wild rhythms of life. Let's just sit for a few moments together before we transition.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.